Hey, everybody. Welcome to the True Crime Squad. I'm Christy Brower, and I am on my own again tonight. Katie's off watching her daughter's softball team that she coaches. She coaches college softball. And guess what? They are playing for the district championship, I think, tomorrow. And they're going into it undefeated. So they're doing really, really well. So yay for the Miles Pioneers. I know. What the hell kind of mascot is that? Anyway, it's awesome. And, you know, please throw some support into the air for them, because that's a pretty exciting place to be. My niece played for this team and now she coaches. And they have actually won districts before. So it would be super cool if they could do it again. I also have something really fun to share with you. So, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I told you that my kitten was born. My cousin has a Persian pair. We've always had rescue pets and primarily always will. But I always have wanted a Persian and to know someone. It's not like a kitten farm or anything. Like, it's just one pair. Well, guess what, guys? We picked our kitten today. Meet Gigi. Is she the sweetest thing you've ever seen in your whole life? Isn't she darling? What we wanted was an orange tabby, but we wanted an orange tabby girl, and there aren't very many of those. And so we decided to go with a calico that has a lot of orange in her. So that's little Gigi. And she is doing so well. My cousin is a wonderful kitten mama. She's actually, this is this mama's first litter. And so the kittens are a little small, and she thinks maybe she's not getting quite enough milk. So she is supplementing them a few times a day to help make sure that they are really growing and doing great. But yeah, this is little Gigi, and she's going to become our travel cat. I have always wanted to train a travel cat. I have two kitties. You've seen them on here before, Sandy and Mimi. I love them dearly, but they are 10 and 14. And yeah, they will be doing no traveling, as you can imagine. But we're going to be doing, you know, not Gigi from Pretty Lies and Alibis. That's funny. But no, it's kind of a theme. We have ZZ and Nini. Those are our dogs. Our cats are Sandy and Mimi. And now we're going to have Gigi. It's just something we do. And I've talked to you a little bit about our motorhome. We took our motorhome out last weekend for the first time. And we're going to do some traveling in our motorhome. And our little dogs travel really well. So I want to train a cat that can travel with us as well. So I'm going to, for the first time in my life, and probably, you know, learn a lot on YouTube and stuff. Deanna, you have this shirt. I love this shirt. I love mushrooms. I just love everything mushroom. That's so funny. But anyway, we're going to train her. We're going to train her to be able to be on a harness and be in a backpack and, you know, to be comfortable out and around the world and stuff. And so I'm so excited about it. And this baby, you know, she's still 6-ish weeks or more away from coming home, I'm sure. But I'm so excited. It's going to be really a lot of fun. And I hope my big kitties like her. I don't know. They're older ladies and they are a little set in their ways. So they're probably going to slap her a lot. You know how cats are. But I'm so very excited to get to meet little Gigi. Some of Gigi's siblings' eyes are starting to open. So I think we're going to see her eyes open here pretty quickly as well. And you know how kittens are, man. When those eyes open, then they are, even when they're not even quite walking yet, they are scooting all over the place. And so she's going to be really active here pretty soon. I haven't met her yet. I was kind of waiting, let them get a little bit bigger, let them be with their mama, make sure the one I liked wasn't going to die. Cause you know how that happens. Like kittens definitely, you know, they need a little time. But I think we're probably safe to make that decision now. So I'm so excited. Yes, buy a glow collar for traveling. Yeah. See, there's so much stuff. There's all this stuff, like all the van life people, a lot of them have a cat. And I love cats and I miss my cats dearly when we travel. And so I've always thought, well, my next generation of cats are going to be travelers. so they can go with us. That's why we love to travel by car or now our motorhome, because we don't like to leave our dogs. We adore our little dogs and we want them to be with us. And now we'll have a kitty too. Oh, Noreen says, I have a beautiful Maine Coon and she is so sweet, but she is big. Gentle giants. Yeah. And I don't think Gigi will be super big. Her mama is not a super big kitty. Her mama is the kind of person that has a little bit less of a squished face. And then daddy is the very traditional, very squished face. And mama is a gray tabby and daddy is an orange tabby. So I'm just super excited. It's going to be really fun. And she's beautiful. And I just love cats. So I've never been able to be one of those people that can choose between cats and dogs. I can't choose. I love all of them. Bring them on. I would take all five of these cats if I could. Seriously. I won't though, because I'll get in trouble. My wife has to temper me from time to time when it comes to cats, particularly. Yes, cats are so smart and have such personality, Tom. And that's what I love about them. You know, my little Mimi is, she's a little shithead quite a bit. But I don't care because I love her personality. She cracks me up. Oh, Marta, start so young and they will love it. I had a cat live to almost 20 named Fiasco and she went everywhere with me. Loved the car and even would ride on my bike. Oh, that's so fun. Oh my gosh. That is so fun. See, that's what I want, is I want her to be able to go with us just like our little dogs do. Our little Nini, our dachshund has a bad back. So she now just rides around in a stroller when we go places. Yeah, we are those people. We have a dachshund in a stroller. Oh, I have seen the guy who rides his motorcycle with his kitty and the kitty has a helmet. I have totally seen that. So awesome. Yes, Deanna. Mimi has strong leadership skills. She does. She is a wild woman. And I love that about cats. I love my dogs very much. But they're so loyal and sweet. And they're very funny and full of personality too, because they're little dogs and little dogs think they're big dogs. So I really like that about our pets. I want them to have their own personalities. And they very much do. Yeah, I've seen that. Yep. Jennifer, me too. Seen it on TikTok. So anyway, that was a little bit of joy for me today, because I'm super excited about when we get to meet her for the first time and we get to bring her home and stuff. I've always thought about having a Maine Coon, Marta. I know they're really, really cool. He lived to 31. Wow. Sandy, you have five. I've had five or six many times and we're just down to two and they're 10 and 14. So I thought, you know what? It's time. We need to add another kitty. I don't like to wait till they pass away and, you know, go through all of that. I kind of like to be in a progression. You know, we'll probably add a little dog here in a couple of years for the same reason. I don't ever want to be without them, is what I'm saying. And they do die. It sucks, but it is reality. But I found that it's easier on me if I always have a young one coming up. Oh, Eternity missed the kitten. That's okay. I will show you again. Here she is. This is little Gigi. Isn't she sweet? She's going to be beautiful. She's a little calico Persian. So I'm excited. Yes, I will definitely share more pictures. And my cousin said she's going to take more pictures of her for us too. And I mean, we live in the same town. We'll get to go meet her pretty soon. I just wanted to give them time to, and time for their mama too, because I know I've had cats all my life and I know how stressed out mama kitties get when there are too many strangers around. But I will definitely be sharing. Yes, I think that you're right, Teresa, that having younger cats, younger animals extends the life of the older ones, because it helps them to play and, you know, kind of stay young at heart. Yeah. Oh, Marta says, my little family is two cats and a deaf black lab that is turning three tomorrow. Dagny is so funny. She actually watches. Oh, my chat jumped. Hang on. Oh, she watches the screen. That's funny. I love that. I love deaf pets. I had a deaf cat when I was a kid, and they're just really special. Oh, Terry says, I have two. One Torby and Gray Tabby. Aw. How much fun. Sand Willow says, my cats have always been bossy and uncooperative. I love them all, but they aren't sweet. Oh, no. They aren't sweet? I'm sorry. Well, I know this is really a true crime podcast, but it's something that we do. We like to share our lives with you guys because we like to hear about you as well and learn about your lives as well. Because one of the things we love about this podcast is just getting to know people from all over the world. Oh, Leanne, you are allergic. That is a bummer. That is a major bummer. Well, we will share photos. We will share more photos. And if you guys want to share photos, we could do a thread over in our Facebook group of and see everybody's pets. I'll start that today. If you want to run over there, and I'll start it after this podcast, and we'll so everybody can share, because I think it's really fun to share our pets with each other. A lot of fun. Well, today was an interesting day in court. It was a much drier and at times more boring day. I have a lot of respect for the way the prosecutors are structuring their case. In the way that they, you know, they give us a lot of drama, and then we go back to, okay, but here are the facts of the case we got to have. And then, you know, you think about how that affects the jury. They never really kind of get worn out on any one thing, because then they move on to something else. And the prosecution did something super, super smart today. And that was the way that they ended today. So let me just tell you a little bit about what did happen today. We started out with retired Detective Stubbs on the stand again. He was from the Rexburg Police Department. He is retired now and off doing other things. But we sort of started back at the beginning with when the Rexburg Police first learned that first JJ and then Tylee were missing. And this was, I think, really good to kind of come back. We've been through a lot of the Tammy case, and now it's time to go through the kids. So I want to share with you, first and foremost, one of the reasons that Stubbs was on the stand is that he brought his body cam footage from the police's very first interaction with Lori. And I think this is a really important video, because I think it set up where the police were at with Lori and her behavior and what they saw from her from the beginning, which has helped them to know from day one that there was some bullshit going on here. And this video is such a great example of that. It's really rather stunning. And you've probably seen this video before. It was in Lori's trial. I think it's been on the news before, but there are so many reasons to suspect Lori after watching this video that you can see why they were like, yeah, we're not just going to walk away from this and think her kid is in Arizona. So I'm going to play it, and let's just think about, if this was your very first time meeting Lori, what would your impression of her be?
Her car's out there too.
What?
Think about it. It's blue. Blue Subaru.
Hi.
You all right? Lori, I'm Lieutenant Ball, Police Department. How are you? You got a minute? You alone or you got help?
My brother's here.
Okay. Let's take these gloves.
Hello.
Sweet Jim.
So, we're here.
Oh, this is a big mess. I just talked to the guy on the phone.
And what did he ask you?
He was just saying that he wanted to do a well check on JJ.
So, JJ would be where?
He's in Arizona.
Who's he with in Arizona?
He's with one of my friends in Arizona.
Oh.
Hi.
Oh. Hey. You got a notepad?
No. Oh, you want?
No, no. Come here. Mind if he comes in?
Oh, come
so,
sorry.
Who's the friend he's with?
My friend Melanie. Her son has autism. Her name's Melanie Good. I gave him all the information on the phone.
Okay, so he can call?
Yeah.
Or Discord?
Yeah. What is all this?
We're a little concerned.
What?
Because, well, the officers who were here earlier were checky, and they got a bad vibe that, like, something was going on here because nobody knew anything about a child. They weren't talking.
It's because a lot of stuff that was going on. If you want to know, it's a lot of stuff. So,
well, that's why we're concerned, because it just was kind of weird.
It is very weird. I've had to move around a lot. One of my brothers is trying to kill me, not the brother that lives here. Obviously, he's kind of my protector. My other brother was in with my husband, who was trying to kill me for my $2 million life insurance policy.
No.
So a lot of stuff has gone on in this last year. It's been a horrible year for us. I've had to move around. And so I was going to move back to Arizona, put my son back in the school there, because I tried to put him in school here, public school, Kennedy.
Okay.
He went for 2 months. We tried it, but he had such a hard time. Now, the person who called is my sister-in-law, but she's his natural grandmother. He's adopted by us. Okay, so her son, who is a drug addict, had a baby with a girl who's a drug addict, and they took him from, you know, CPS took him.
Okay.
Gave him to the grandmother. She came and got him, and then she wanted us to adopt him, which we did. And we loved
why
him.
Why us?
My husband and I, who died earlier this year.
Okay.
He passed away. Since he passed away, she's been trying to fight me for him and being really horrible to me and that kind of stuff.
The
she's kind of the paternal friend.
Okay, thank
Does
you.
That makes
That's
sense.
What I mean. The paternal grandmother.
He has autism and ADHD. He doesn't really talk to people. Like he's very special needs. So I had him in a special needs school there. She was trying to so what happened was my husband, who we were married for 15 years and had raised all these 5 kids together, switched his life insurance policy to her, right?
To
his sister,
okay.
Who got $1 million when he died, and we got nothing. For me to raise JJ, and all the kids got nothing, and everybody got nothing. She got $1 million. So I knew she was going to try to sue me for him. Or,
for JJ?
Yeah, because she now has this $1 million, so she can hire people to help. Him and I have nothing.
But you have nothing. Legal custody.
He's my son. I adopted him.
Right.
He was 2 years. We had him from the time he was 8 months old till 2 years old. So she does nothing and wants to cause me trouble. So I don't tell people the truth about where we are and what we're doing because of those reasons. So I look like a suspect, but I am a good person. Raised all of my kids. I've done everything that I'm supposed to do in life. But everyone is causing me trouble right now. So
we don't want to cause a lot of trouble. How long have you been here?
We've only been here since September.
Okay.
We moved up here in September. My daughter goes to BYUI.
Your daughter goes to BYUI?
Yeah.
Does she live here?
Mm-hmm. So it's been a nightmare. But I'm going to go back to Arizona so I can put him back in the special needs school. He couldn't do the school here. It was too hard for him. He would scream and cry, take him to school. The principal would have to come out, try to drag him out of the car. Like, this just was too hard. But I just don't tell people where I am. I don't tell her where I am ever. And she doesn't have any legal rights to anything. Like, she's been horrible to me since my husband died.
My understanding, she never called you to try to get the child, you know, hey, I'm interested in the child back, you know, but that.
I know, but she sends me these emails with, like, the date and, like, she's putting up court stuff, you know, like, just documenting. I haven't heard from him in all this time. And so I've told her that he's fine. But
see, and we hadn't heard any of that as far as.
I'm just saying she's doing this as part of that, yeah. Is my understanding.
And our only concern in this whole thing,
yeah, is, that
is,
he's
the,
fine.
Is the child.
I got it.
And so that's where we're at on the. And then
so
we were just a little weirded out when, you know, and I understand now that we've heard your side of the story.
It's awful. They just, yeah. I feel like I'm being tracked all the time. I'm like, why are police coming to my car? What did I do?
They said they were going to visit two guys, and I'm assuming one's your brother.
Who was this? Yeah.
Who was the other one? The other guy they were visiting with. There were two.
Visited.
Well, we had two detectives over here trying to.
Looking for you a little while ago.
Oh, because I was at the store.
And they ran into. Well, probably one of your brothers.
My brother and his friend, probably.
Oh, who's
he's been
that?
Moving. Chad?
Chad from Rapid? Mm-hmm. What's his last name? Bill? Okay. All right.
It's just a mess. Like, just constantly causing me trouble.
Chad the Baybello?
He's an author.
Doesn't he live like out in the. He's not the Chad the Bell, but yeah, his wife passed away recently. Is that him?
I don't know.
But it is Chad the Baybello.
Yeah. But it sounds familiar as an author.
I think I know one of his. He's got a couple of daughters.
He has lots of kids.
Okay. I'm going to say. All right. Well, you need anything else? Sorry to bother you.
Thank you.
We don't mean to be a problem.
I'm sorry that people are constantly knocking on me. People are looking for me, and I just don't want to be found. So.
Have you had problems? Because I think we only had.
Well, the reason I'm moving is because the brother that was going to kill me, that was on emails and texts with my husband at the time, he was showing up here, so he found out where I was, and he was knocking on my door.
No, this was your brother?
One of my brothers.
He showed up here and was knocking on your door.
He lives in Kansas.
And you said something about you were getting threatening emails?
Well, no. Just after my husband passed, I found emails between them that they were planning all this stuff to get rid of me.
Do we need to worry about him coming over?
Well, that's when I'm moving back. Moving, and I'm not going to be in a place. I'm going to live with my friend, Melanie. Don't tell anybody her name, Gib, because I don't want anything in my name. I put the apartment in my name, but I've been staying over here with my brother because he protects me.
Okay.
He's very protective of me. So
if he shows back up, you know, you can call, take care of it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I just, like, it's just a nightmare. I mean, I canceled the insurance policy because my husband passed, so there's no money if they kill me. And what are they going to do with JJ and Patty? Like, what do people think?
Yeah.
So.
Well, if you have a problem, shows back up, feel free to call us.
Okay.
We'll come in front of the mob or something. Okay. All right.
Sure.
Okay. Get out of here. Say goodbye.
Thank you.
See ya.
Not.
Okay. She had the worst verbal diarrhea I've heard in a long time. And several of you said she sounded manic. She did. She sounded manic, panicked, anxious. She said a ridiculous amount of bullshit, the vast majority of which was untrue and also provably untrue. But the way that she went on and on and on, that's what people do when they're lying. They asked her a very few questions, and she gave them way more information than they asked for. I have no doubt that those officers walked out of there when they said, not, that means turn off your body cam, because they only need to have the body cam on when they are speaking to a suspect or it's evidentiary. They don't record themselves having conversations about what the hell did you think about that? John Pryor made a big deal out of that today, like it was doing something wrong. It is not doing something wrong. But can you imagine? They all stood there and went, what the hell was that? All they said was, where's JJ? And she just, with my friend in Arizona, and then just a mile a minute, just utter bullshit and stuff that was checkable and provable, like that had her brother been there trying to kill her, which they did actually look into. And no, because she was talking about her brother, Adam, and Adam had never been there. The stuff about, you know, when they brought up Chad, the thing is, she didn't realize they know who Chad is. They know they're married. They know that grandma that she's talking about blaming everything on is the person who called for the well check. They know all this stuff, but they don't tell her anything. And she just went on and on and on about all kinds of stuff and trying to kill me and the emails and there's court stuff and so much stuff that did not exist and could be provably not exist was very stupid. They caught her already just with the things that they knew in so many lies, and they just stood there and smiled and let her talk. And man, she talked herself right into a giant hole. Right, Adam didn't even know where she lived. They knew about Chad. Yes. So they had come to the house earlier in the day. This was body cam that was played earlier in the trial. They'd come to the house earlier in the day and they talked to Chad and they talked to Alex while they were looking for her. And that is when Chad lied and said he didn't have her phone number. You know, Chad, who's Alex's friend. That's what she said. Oh, his friend. His friend Chad, you know. Oh, you know, that guy that he's an author. They were married at the time of this visit. And the police knew they were married. Yeah. I hear what you're saying, Leah, about her sounding bipolar. She really did. The way that she talked herself in circles, she set off their suspicious meters so quickly. Right. The way she immediately brought up someone was trying to kill her. It was her brother and her husband, but her husband's dead now, don't you know? And it was for her $2 million life insurance policy. And oh my gosh. Yes. All of the stuff she said about JJ was really weird. She lied about a lot of timelines and things that just didn't even work. The one whose shadow you can see, that's Alex. So she tells them that Alex is there, and I've seen a bigger version of this video where you can kind of see him in the stairwell and see his shadow. But yeah, he was just there lurking. No, it wasn't Chad. He wasn't there. It was Alex. He was there and he kind of went back up the stairs after the police got there. Like, he did not want to talk to them and they didn't really speak to him, but they knew he was there. Yeah. So they didn't know that the police from Arizona had called and said, hey, the grandmother of this child wants a well check. Like, she didn't know any of those things. And so they knew a lot more about her than she realized. And she just gave them so much bullshit, so many reasons to immediately suspect her. I'm not a suspect. I'm a good person, she says. Would you ever say that to the police? Why would you ever say that? They didn't say she was a suspect. They didn't accuse her of anything, but she said, I'm not a suspect. I'm a good person. I raised all five of my kids, except for the two that are dead in Chad Daybell's backyard at this point, because the kids are dead at this point. This is all a bunch of crap. This is when all of that went down with Chad and Melanie Gibb. And of course, she drops Melanie's name and gives her last name. She just cannot stop herself. But this is when they called and said, hey, just don't. Right. A suspect in what? Right. But she said it. I'm not a suspect. Okay. We didn't say you were. But they call and they ask Melanie initially to just not answer the phone. And then the police just won't give up because they go back again and they're like, hey, we really need to hear from your friend Melanie. So then, you know, they tell the whole lie about, oh, she took him to Frozen 2. And so then Melanie does lie to the police and say that she does have JJ. And then after a while, days, she starts feeling guilty about that and goes into the Gilbert, Arizona police and says, hey, this happened. I said I have him. I don't have him. I don't know where he is. That's how this all kicked off. Yeah. Right? He was on alert when he saw Alex was there. Well, you know, they want to know immediately if they come to your door, they want to know who's in the house because they don't want to be getting ambushed by somebody. And I thought that Alex's behavior was really suspicious, the way he just sort of sneaked back up the stairs and stayed out of it. Like, you know, she's probably repeating what Chad's told her, but I don't know. In the moment, she's about as good at lying as Chad was about lying about Tammy's death. I mean, what are we up to? 10 different versions of her death now? These guys are not good criminals. They just lucked out a few times. Why is she not telling the police that the kids are zombies and their bodies had to be destroyed? Right. I mean, if they really believed this stuff hardcore, they would just say, well, God said they had to die, right? Right. Mel G, yeah, David Warwick did really push her to go talk to the police because she involved herself. Yeah. That video is so damning. And especially when you look back at it. But even if you had met her in the moment, would you not have been pretty suspicious of her based on her panicked behavior and how she could not stop talking? She was just filling all of the time so that they couldn't ask her more questions. Right. And Alex had already messed up. He talked to the police earlier in the day. Chad messed up too. Talked to the police. He lied to them. Didn't have Lori's phone number, you know, all this stuff. Right. Ellie did drop the ball. But that started in Arizona. These deaths were already done by the time these guys got a hold of this situation. But they were suspicious from the very beginning. They knew. Something's not right here. Why is she telling us all this stuff? And she's lying to us about who her husband is. And you can really see that they knew from the very beginning of meeting her that things were not right. So that was yesterday, right at the end of the day. But it was relevant because do we know if Lori is able to watch the trial from jail? I suspect that she is. Chad was able to watch the trial from jail when Lori was on trial as well. Let's talk about this a little bit. So this started with Stubbs yesterday. And so he brought this body cam. There was another body cam, but it's very brief and I didn't bring it. They go back to talk to her because they've been trying to call Melanie Gibb and they've also been trying to call Lori and no one is answering the phone. So they just show up like, hey, we've been trying to reach your friend. What's going on? And she tells the story about them being at the movies. She was taking him to Frozen 2 today. I'm sure that's probably where they are. That's why she's not answering. But in the meantime, this is when these frantic phone calls are happening between Melanie Gibb and actually Chad is the one who's asked her to lie and who's, you know, been trying to control what Melanie Gibb does. Right. She's all over the place with number of kids. She said we raised our 5 kids, which is pretty ridiculous because Charles's kids were like at this point, they were both adults and they had been older teenagers. And I believe they actually lived with their mother and she didn't raise them, you know. So let's see. Then things kind of slow down with Stubbs because well, we got to do a lot of the backstory. We do see the body cam footage of them searching the apartments because they go back when they cannot confirm anything with Melanie Gibb. They go back to check these apartments and guess what? These folks have run. Everybody's gone. The apartments are empty. This is on November 27th that they go back to the houses. They go into all three apartments. They had no knock warrants to go into those townhouses or whatever you want to call them. And they're just gutted, basically. They've got missing clothes, stuff sort of spread all over the place. Like, they just threw their shit together and got out. They find that, they find that rental agreement for Lori's storage unit that day. They learn some things about that. There's food in the pantry. There are, in the garage, there are couches, tables, guns, and several totes. They find a bunch of guns that day, including the gun. That they think is the gun that was used in the attempted shooting at Tammy. And let's see. They find a bunch of stuff. Oh, they find some stuff in Lori's using the name Lori Ryan. They find some things there. In Melanie Boudreau's apartment, it actually looked like someone did live there. It wasn't just trash the way that Lori's apartment was and Alex's apartment. They were, just empty, you know, but sorry, I'm getting distracted. But in the apartment of Melanie Boudreau, they find some interesting things. Melanie Boudreau had this binder with sort of like organizer pages in it, and in it were Brandon Boudreau's credit cards and driver's license. And they were divorced at this point. Just wild. So there's a lot of stuff that really makes them question what's going on. They also really notice that there's not a lot of stuff that would imply that there are children who live there or a child who lives there. Like, Lori's apartment doesn't really appear to have anything in it. They find guitar cases with guitars in them. Just kind of a bunch of random stuff around. Let's see. Melanie Boudreau's apartment is more set up. There's furniture and pictures on the walls. But the credit cards and the driver's license that belong to Brandon Boudreau are pretty interesting, considering they were divorced at this point. Why did she have his driver's license? Seems creepy. Let's see. So they kind of talk a little bit about, you know, what's in the, what they find in the townhouses. And then we get into a lot of different warrants and what geolocation tracking is, and location, talk about location services on phones. And they talk about Alex's email account, the Homer J. Maximus account, and Lori's accounts, the Lolly Time and Lori for Style accounts, and how they were seeking all of these warrants. And they had requested tap and trace warrants on devices as well as on phones, because they, at this point, they realized they're looking for children. Wood asks, you know, why were they looking at Chad Daybell's location? Because I had a warrant looking at his location. And it was because they knew they were married and they couldn't get a hold of either one of them. And they were lying about being married, and they were lying about where the kids were. So they tracked Lori and Chad's devices to Kauai in Hawaii. And that's ultimately when they found them in Hawaii. And there was a warrant issued, and they did show up there. That's when they arrested Lori, and they took 10 electronic devices from their rental car. They had 10 phones on them. I think it was 9 phones and an iPad, and that iPad had been JJ's. But they found them through Google location. So Stubbs talked about working with the FBI. to go through all of, you know, this mountain of information that they got. They did manage to get a warrant for Melanie Boudreau's phone, which I think is pretty interesting. And I would sure like to see her get questioned about what's on that phone. This was in early 2020. So this is in January 2020 when they arrest Lori in Kauai. And the kids, to their knowledge, are still missing. Let's see. Oh, yes. In the car. So Chad and Lori were driving around in a rental car with all of their burner phones and all kinds of information with them wherever they went. There was money. They had money in a bag in that car. They also had a notebook that had pages of email accounts and passwords, because they had all these different accounts. But they literally had the accounts and passwords on them when Lori was arrested, and they took all of that. That's right. They had a warrant for 12 devices, but that was too many for Verizon. Stubbs did talk about having a little trouble getting some of those warrants because it was during the pandemic and people didn't always respond. And Google is rather famous for not responding unless they are forced. Yeah, and we don't know anything about what Melanie was up to in Idaho, but we do expect that she will be testifying in this case. And so I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see her early in the week next week. We're getting to the point where they're going to be having to talk to her. You know, they're really not going to have a choice but to talk to her. So they were really using the Google location stuff to just determine, where are these people? And do they have any children with them? So that brought us up to the point where the kids were found on June 9th, 2020 on Chad's property. And then they issued more warrants because they wanted to find out who's been hanging around at that property to, you know, kind of see what's been going on around here. Who's been around here during this time? Let's see. Stubbs talked about finding the, you know, the order for the wedding rings and for the some of the other wedding related stuff. There was that one charge for the wedding stuff that was for $108, and the credit card that they used failed and the purchase was declined. They've never said who that credit card belonged to. But it has made me think it was probably Brandon Boudreau, because they had a bunch of his credit cards, Melanie did. And they were using other people's money for everything possible. Let's see. Oh, they did talk about searching Chad's search history on his chad.daybell@gmail.com account. This is when the search for wind direction and what it was going to be on September 9th. And that is when they believe that Chad tried to burn Tylee's body behind Chad's house. And he was looking up the wind direction to see if anybody would be able to smell it. And I was thinking about where the property is and where the fire pit is, because I've been there. So if the wind was blowing to the south, it would have wafted that smoke like into a bunch of residential houses. If it wafted it to the north, then it was wafting it straight into farmland and the river. And so given the right day, given the right conditions, the right wind, especially because when they were burning her body, they were also burning limbs. This is the day that the raccoon text happened. Was sent to Tammy. I shot a raccoon and buried it in the pet cemetery. I'm also burning a bunch of branches. So he was burning branches as well to try to help, but he was worried about the smell. We all know that's exactly what he was doing. It does take a lot to burn a human body, and you can't do it in a campfire. In a fire pit like that, it does not burn hot enough to burn bone. So there's a lot of question about that particular issue, because we don't know where all of Tylee's body actually ended up. Because it wasn't all there. When they found the kids and dug up their bodies, they did not get all of Tylee's body. A significant part of her body was missing, and they had not ever found it. And there are a lot of questions about what did they do? Because the bones don't burn. Bones, you can't burn bones in that kind of a fire. You got to have like a crematorium type fire to be able to burn that. So did they put them in the river? Some people have thought maybe they chipped them through a wood chipper. The problem with that is that I think that they would have found tiny bone chips all over the property if they'd done that. I think they took them somewhere else and got rid of them. But that's sort of how all of that came together for them to find the kids. So they finish up with Stubbs. Well, they sort of finish up with Stubbs. Wood finishes up with Stubbs. And they had talked about a jump drive that had been found. One of the things that had been found. And it was the jump drive that had the photos from Chad and Lori's wedding in Hawaii. And when they did the forensic examination of that jump drive, on the jump drive was deleted a ton of family photos and photos of Tammy. I suspect that jump drive was probably used at Tammy's funeral for a slideshow. I don't know if other people do this, but around here, it's pretty common for there to be a slideshow of family photos and photos of the deceased at various times in their life playing during the viewing, before and after the viewing. Sometimes it even plays during the funeral. And having those all together, this is my own supposition, but I think they probably put a bunch of photos on that jump drive for Tammy's funeral. And then Chad, being the ignorant asshole that he is, deleted all those photos and then just reused that jump drive or flash. They were calling it a flash drive, you know, whatever. And reused it for the photos from their wedding. And I find that just detestable. I'll bet the jury found it detestable too. It doesn't mean that he actually deleted those photos. They probably exist somewhere else. But I bet that they all got put together on there for her funeral. And then deleted and used the same jump drive. Yes. Yeah, Terry. Yeah, Terry says, we had photos on a jump drive for both my parents. So I think you're right. Yeah, I think that. It's probably exactly what happened. Exactly what happened. So, I mean, we do know that Tylee was disarticulated. They took her body apart. But, you know, there's only part of her skull left. There's a huge amount of her body that's missing. Her arms and legs are not there. So, what did he do? Where did those bones go? They've never been able to find them. So then we get Pryor on the stand for really a bunch of nonsense. He goes over the photos. He tries to just discredit Stubbs in every way that he can because he's talking about some evidence that he's not the one that actually took the pictures. He's just the detective that happens to be on the stand. It doesn't mean anything really, because that happens all the time, because this is a group of people doing this investigation, especially three murders. One of the things he asked that I thought was really funny about the body cam footage with Lori, he asked Stubbs if he agreed that Lori was very convincing in that video. And Stubbs was like, yeah, no, not convincing at all. I thought that was really funny. He also, Pryor jumped him about saying not, which just it's a signal to turn off the body cam after they left Lori's apartment, as though that was something inappropriate, which it isn't. they don't record every conversation they have. They record when they're talking to a suspect. They record when it's evidence, not their own conversations. Pryor brought up again that there was no text message that specifically said, Chad to Lori, let's kill the kids. We all know that that text message itself does not exist, but there are many conversations that mean exactly the same thing that do exist. Let's see. It was a lot of the usual, just dumb, trying to make him, just trying to discredit him. There was a question about why. Oh, yes. At one point, Pryor was really being rude to Stubbs and speaking over top of him. And he would get all puffed up and ask him a question. And then he'd turn and walk away from the lectern for a minute before he could walk back. Like he was all pissed off because he was really making a point. It did not work. I didn't think at all. And finally, there'd been an objection. The objection was overruled. And then Pryor just starts asking the witness another question. And Boyce goes, Mr. Pryor, when I make a ruling, don't ask another question. The witness can answer. And he was pissed. Will we hear about those texts? Oh, yes, that's coming. The text messages are coming. We've already seen some of them. There's many more to come. It's gotten kind of confusing because they jumped in with the kids. Then they went all the way through Tammy's case. Now I think we're going to go through the kids' case from the beginning to the end. And that's what's happening here. But we will definitely see that. But I loved it when the judge smacked Pryor down because he was really rude to Stubbs. And Stubbs, you know, is trying to answer him. Stubbs did a great job of just staying calm and answering his questions. Let's see. Oh, the other part of this was and we've seen this so many times, why didn't you ask Melanie Gibb, or why didn't you have warrants for Melanie Gibb's phone and for David Warwick's phone? You know why? Because in the dates that they were looking for, their phones didn't show up on the geofence. They didn't have any reason to. There was no reason to suspect them. And Wood was able to get that point in right at the very end of Stubbs' testimony, which I thought was really great because it's important to remember that Melanie Gibb and David Warwick have never been suspects. One of the other things that Stubbs said was Melanie Gibb and David Warwick were cooperating with the police. We knew where they were. It was all these other people that we had to find through location services and geofencing and stuff, because they were not cooperating with the police. I thought it was a really good point, and it needed to be said several times already. So then we got FBI Special Agent Steve Daniels. Steve Daniels is a rock star. He was in Lori's trial as well, and he is so smart and does such a great job of laying out exactly how the investigation of Chad's property went and the finding of the kids. Alicia, will we see special guest Fabio Toadface for the trial summary when we recap those text messages? We probably will. I suspect Fabio Toadface is coming back because, yeah, there's some real gross text messages, but I'll do my best with them. But I really like Daniels. He's real smart. And he was the leader of the ERT for the FBI on the investigation of Chad's property. And that's the evidence response team. He has worked for the FBI for 26 years and has done ERT training. And so what they do is they map out the property. And they have it all mapped out. They have satellite imagery before they even came up there. They had all this stuff. They had a very clear, like, sector by sector plan of how they were searching that property, and because they absolutely believed that they were going to find human remains on that property at that point. And that information came from a lot of different things. the one of the analysts that caught the raccoon text and how odd that was. The last days that the children were seen alive, that there was any like photographic proof that they were living. And then the geofencing that showed phones being in certain in locations on Chad's property is how they figured out that, hey, we're pretty sure this is where the kids are. So Daniel's job was to give everybody a job. And, you know, he had this crime scene log going. He had somebody taking photographs. And he did this walkthrough of the property. And he showed on the screen several times this plan they had of how they planned to search the property very methodically and specifically, which it was really smart because it maintained all of the integrity of the forensics. So they had two people who were assigned to assess the fire pit. Said big concerns about that fire pit being there and why was it there and what was going on there. They had satellite imagery that showed them disturbances to the ground that indicated to them that there had been digging in those places. Another reason why they thought there were bodies there. They used this thing called a FARO scanner that is a measuring device, and it was measuring everything and collecting data that was, guess what, voluminous. They used our word. I love it. Scanning everything in the property and where everything was and distances and stuff. It was really cool. Let's see. Oh, yeah, then we had to take a break because there was a big technical snafu with wood. And so there was a break for a while. That's when lunch actually ended up happening. They were trying to get through quickly today because the judge wanted everything done by 2:30 today. And so they were trying to do shortened breaks and shortened lunch. But when you've got an entire jury, which is now 17 people, we lost a juror yesterday. You probably know that, but somebody got sick and had to quit the jury. But that's a lot of people to get through a small number of public restrooms. Plus all the people in the gallery as well. So that's what I've heard is the main problem with the speed of things. Let's see. But some really important things happened today. And the way that they timed this to happen, Wood first made sure he took up all of the time today at the in the afternoon. So there was no opportunity for Pryor to cross Daniels. Daniels will be back on the stand on Monday. And they brought up some very key evidence in the last hour that the jury will never forget, unfortunately. I'm sorry that they had to see these things. They saw what they found at the fire pit when they discovered Tylee's remains. I saw that too in Lori's trial. It's traumatic to see because you're not looking at a body. You're looking at body parts. They were finding tissue and bone and a green melted bucket. And under the green melted bucket was a portion of Tylee's skull. Those images, we didn't see them. Thank God, just the jury did. Nobody, you don't need to see them. Trust me. Nobody ever needs to see those. But that's really what Daniels is here to do, is to talk through how they discovered those remains and how they bagged them up to take them for testing and stuff, because we're not talking about a body here. It's rough. Yeah. So this was really important for establishing the forensic information. Then they did something else that was really cool. So one of the ways that they immediately knew that this body was Tylee is that they found a necklace. It's a Pura Vida chain and charm. I don't know. Do any of you know what Pura Vida is? Pura Vida is a little jewelry company that makes costume jewelry that a lot of like teenage girls and young adults wear. I think my nieces and lots of my nieces have worn a lot of this stuff. And they found this Pura Vida chain and a little silver charm. And they could then, with a photograph of Tylee, prove that that was, in fact, her necklace, that there was a picture of her prior to her death wearing it. It was traumatic to hear him describe it. And this part is very traumatic as well, I think. It makes it very real to see that little piece of jewelry and go, this is a real live teenage girl that lost her life. So I'm going to show you the video of the jewelry. So Katie had a really cool idea, and that was that we reach out to Pura Vida and we explain, hey, did you know this? We sent them, Katie wrote them this awesome email telling them the story. We sent them the video of the FBI agent identifying the jewelry and the photo. And we asked them, would you be willing to make a memorial piece of her, you know, for her called the Tylee? And maybe you donate a little bit from every sale to, you know, a missing and exploited children kind of organization. So that has already happened. Katie did it. The necklace was not burned. No, it was just there in the dirt. So I'm going to show you, this is a little video of them showing that to the jury and then the officer who actually was there when it was found identifying it, and a picture that's not a very, we can't see it very good because the screen, as you know, not great. A picture of Tylee actually wearing it. So I'm going to show you this little video.
And was that actually in the fire pit?
That was in the fire pit. And then the team found that when we were conducting the sifting operation that I described.
Your Honor's honor, for the record, I'm now publishing State's Exhibit 175.
All right, 175 is being published.
Can you describe what you see there?
That's the silver charm, and that's the charm that was found in that northeast corner, just outside of our grid perimeter. And that was seen on our exhibit, indicated by that red dot over by the measurement area.
And Your Honor, for the record, I'm now publishing State's Exhibit 6. Agent, have you seen this image before?
I have.
Do you know who that individual is?
Tylee Ryan.
Do you see her wearing any jewelry?
I do.
Does that jewelry resemble or look like the jewelry recovered from Chad Daybell's property?
It does.
Thank you.
So that was an important piece that they found, that they were, because they had to identify Tylee by DNA. But they knew immediately that it was Tylee because of that necklace, because they have a photo of her wearing it. So the last thing that they did, the last thing that Wood did at the end of the day was to bring in some tools that came directly from the shed on the Daybell property that they took to test. And so not only did they show photos of the shovels and the other tools that they took in evidence, a saw, clippers, an axe, because they dismembered Tylee. How did they do it? Where is the blood? Where were the tools? And so they brought in the tools that were most likely the tools that were used to bury her and also to dismember her, including a saw and an axe. And they actually brought them in. They were wrapped in brown paper. Daniels unwraps a pick, like a pickaxe, and holds it up in front of the jury. And then he unwraps a shovel. Do you mean that Chad Daybell, the guy who's never used a shovel in his whole life and doesn't know how, had shovels in his shed that appeared dirty as though they'd been used for burying things? Why, yes, he did. And that is where they ended the day. They opted to end the day right there. It was just shortly before 2 o'clock and decided that it was going to take quite a bit more time to get through. And so he'll be back on the stand on Monday. But it was really powerful. And I think it was really smart because those are the images that they sent home with the jury. Tylee's body parts being dug up out of that hole. Her necklace. The picture of her wearing that necklace. And the tools they took from the house that were likely used to dismember her body and bury her. That was probably the biggest mic drop moment we've had so far. Yeah. And yeah, I know a lot of you are asking, how can he possibly say that he wasn't involved in this after all of that? And that's a great question. How can he say that? How can he say that he didn't know any of this happened? Nobody's going to believe it. That jury doesn't believe it now. And he showed one of the things, and I should have had that, and I forgot to grab a screenshot of it. But he did have several shovels. He had a lot of tools in the shed there. The problem being is that Tylee and JJ were buried in September. And these things were all found in June of the next year. So there was a lot of time to clean them. Although there's still a lot of stuff sitting there, and some of those things do have some forensics on them, and they'll get to them. But it's pretty tough to deny, and it's a pretty powerful story to send the jury home with. The last thing I wanted to share with you, Amber asked me for this, and I'm going to tell you, it's not very good. I worked and worked and worked on it, but there was a hot mic moment today. When they were having some technical difficulties. And so Rob Wood and one of the bailiffs, they were working on the Elmo thing, trying to get a video to play. And in that time, we got a little bit of a hot mic from Pryor and Chad. Maybe you guys have better ears than I do. I have cleaned this up and brought the volume up as far as I possibly can. Some words jump out and you're going to hear them. But tell me what you think this says. I'm going to play it for you. I'm going to let it play a few times. You may know, if you heard our story about Katie pushing me off a bridge and me accidentally bridge jumping once, I have some hearing loss. So it's really hard for me to hear like whispery, mumbly stuff. Maybe some of you are better. So go ahead and listen to this.
Why can I end with all of that? Instead of kind of so stipulated, that is not only so instead of saying who I want to scratch off, who doesn't, you're one of those.
That's once.
Why can I end with all of that? Instead of kind of so stipulated, that is not only so instead of saying who I want to scratch off, who doesn't, you're one of those. Why can I end with all of that? Instead of kind of so stipulated, that is not only so instead of saying who I want to scratch off, who doesn't, you're one of those.
So he says something, I can something with that, stipulate something, something, Alex's garage. Those are the only words I can pull out. Anybody else? Can you hear anything else in that? Stipulate in Alex's garage. Yeah, and he says, I can something with that. I can work with that. I can something with that. And then stipulate. And then something about Alex's garage. And then Chad says something. The last statement is Chad. But I cannot, for the life of me, bring that up enough to be able to hear it. The mic system in this courthouse sucks. And there were problems because Wood's mic was hot. and so was Pryor's. So they were over top. They were overlapping. So I pulled all of Wood's stuff out so that we could hear the Pryor and Chad combo. But it was something about stipulating to something to do with Alex's garage. So I wish we could understand. Tina says, all I could hear is Pryor's dentures need some fixative. I think so. Somebody needs something because they are both mumblers really bad. Plus the microphone was to the side of them. It wasn't in front of them. And so it's just sort of picking it up. And most microphones, they have different settings. So different settings tell them if you have to be right in front of them or if they're going to pick up the entire room or if they're going to pick up a broader group of people. And those mics, I'm sure, are set to be a single voice so that when somebody speaks into it, it's not picking up things around them, but only them. And I'm quite sure. Did anyone else hear the word bones? Maybe. I don't know. I will figure out a way to put this up in our Facebook group too, if you guys want to go listen to it some more times, listen to it with headphones on. If you can come up with anything else, I would love it because it's interesting. They're obviously talking about something stipulating, and stipulating is usually I'm stipulating to certain evidence. That's what they use that word for. You guys probably don't even know this about me, but I should tell you. I'm an audio engineer. I actually, one of the things that I do for work is that I record and produce audiobooks. So I do it for authors. So say you wrote a book and you wanted to make an audiobook of it that you could put up on Audible for sale. I produce those books. So that's why I have software and skill to do these kinds of things, because not only am I a podcaster where I use those skills too, but, Audible has really high standards for sound quality. So I do a lot of that kind of work. And, you know, if you ever know anybody that wants to do an audiobook, I'm available. I do like to do them, but it is pretty fun to work on files like that and try to figure them out. But oof, one of your friends just became a narrator. That's awesome. Some authors want to narrate their own book. And that's what I do, is I help narrators that want to narrate their own book to do that. And you can actually do it right from your own home, which is kind of cool. I probably haven't told you that. But yeah, it is cool. It's fun. I enjoy doing it a lot. But there's kind of a rule of thumb in audio, and that is that you can't take bad audio and make it good audio. It's just not possible. It has to start out pretty decent, or you can never take audio like that and turn it into good audio. We can clean it up quite a bit, but still. Yeah, something about Alex's garage. But remember, they had looked at evidence relating to Alex's garage when they searched those apartments. So that's what he was talking about and stipulating to some evidence or something. Nobody hears the, I don't know why I didn't follow that. Maybe, because yeah, he says something. I can something, something, stipulate something, something, Alex's garage. Mello, hey, look, we're in the same boat. Mello says, I'm hard of hearing and I'm a phonologist. I study speech, study pronunciation in linguistics. That's so cool. Mello, that's really interesting, because producing audiobooks and listening to the way people's speech patterns work and the way that different people pronounce various words, I'm fascinated by that. And we may glean some more on Cross. That's true. Like, what were they talking about? What was that about? And was it anything I can work with that? See, I think it was something like I can work with that too forever. I had something like that as well. So I don't know, but we're definitely going to be right back on the stand with Daniels on Monday. We're going to see he'll then go through the finding of JJ's body. They will be back to showing graphic photos again that we won't see. I've been holding out on you. Oh, only kind of. some of you have known me a long time, and some of you were just getting to know each other. So that's probably why. Right, Jennifer, it's like a blurry photo. There's little you can do to make them super sharp. Right, because there's pixels missing. You can't, it's the, you know, the same thing with the sound. And especially whispering. Whispering sucks when it comes to trying to figure something out. I think they will say Alex used that garage. Oh, okay. Oh, that's an interesting thought that he used where the digging tools were found. That could be. Oh, Mello, I feel like I've been paying attention to pronunciation my whole life to understand what people are saying because I'm hard of hearing. That makes a ton of sense. It makes sense why you would end up in that field. That's really cool. Really cool. Do you have any recommendations for people with cerebral palsy talking into speech-to-text software? Dragon Naturally or whatever it's called is bad. You know, I'm not really sure. Honestly, I'm sorry. I wish I could come up with something better, but I think there are actually versions of voice recognition software that are a lot better than Dragon. There are other versions of things out there as well. Oh, wow. Mello, that is really cool. Mello says, I just got a new bone-anchored hearing aid last week. I can use Bluetooth too, but mine goes directly into my skull. I love that. I use bone conduction headphones for the same reason, because going through my skull works better than going through my ears. It's really cool. Your friend's company hires for sci-fi, Buzzy Multimedia. Oh, that's cool. For narrators, is that what you're saying? GSI, that's really cool. Right, the only time my prior has his mic on and then he's whispering to Chad, right? Because we had a lot of that crap again today of him not talking into microphones, didn't we? Well, I don't know about you all. I am beat. It has been a long freaking week. And there's so much more to come, but I really hope that, yeah, that was found before the tools were found. Yeah, it's true. But they had just been talking about Alex's garage at his townhouse. So I think it's probably something to do with that. So don't forget to like, subscribe, share, comment, leave us a review wherever you can. Of course, the super chat is on. You can always tip us at truecrimesquad.com. Go join us over on Patreon. We have a lot of fun plans for Patreon. We do two extra episodes there every month. But after this trial is over, we're going to add some things to Patreon. We're going to start doing a once a month just true crime hangout chat for patrons only, where you can come and we can talk about any case you want to talk about. You can ask us any questions, stuff like that. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be more stuff as well. But right now we're just, you know, knee deep in this trial. But as always, if you ever have a question or a comment, leave it on one of our episodes, message us over on Facebook. I'm going to start the pets thread over there for us all. And you can message us on Instagram as well. And we do get back to you as soon as humanly possible. And just a little secret, we don't have any mods. It's me or Katie. If we're answering you, it's one of us. We probably will have to add a couple, but we don't have any right now. And so if you have any questions or comments, you want to share anything with us, feel free. We love to hear all of those things. So thank you all so very much for joining me tonight. Katie will be back with us next week. Yay. I'm glad. I miss her. It's going to be something. We don't know. Every day it's something brand new. So have an awesome weekend. Take good care of yourselves. Touch some grass. See some sunshine. Get away from this case for a little bit if you can. We all need that. And you know it. We are the True Crime Squad. Bye, everybody.